You're listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. Interesting conversations about innovation, economics, culture, and history for the independent thinkers and curious minds. I'm your host, Alex Wolf.
Hello, thank you for tuning in to this episode. Very, very honored to have this time with your ears, and also want to give a sincere thank you to those who have been listening and sending your messages on Twitter, on Instagram. I see you, I hear you, and we've been chatting, so feels great to just really be engaged with you all and have this space to have these types of weird conversations, because we're weird in the greatest way. So, all right, today's topic is Zen Buddhism is so depressing. Why are you into it? And that is a topic because that is a question I get a lot. And first, I want to make a distinguisher between Zen and Zen Buddhism. So I guess you could say I practice Zen alone. And the reason why I like to make the distinguisher is because Zen Buddhism is a little bit more formal and a little bit more religious, in my opinion. And I don't practice like Buddhism as a religion. I just practice Zen in the sense of it is a practice of tapping into a type of awareness to get a deeper experience out of life. And I also want to respect people who dedicate their lives to the teachings of Zen, because you are not really supposed to talk about it or try to describe it, because it kind of undermines the whole principle of Zen. Not because it's this big sacred thing, but because what we'll be talking about later, it's about tapping into a consciousness that is pre-words. So, meaning like the best way to explain it is like a baby. A baby doesn't know words yet in the same way, doesn't really understand social conventions. And so Zen consciousness is kind of tapping into that baby consciousness as far as just being a receptor of reality and being, you know, a human in its most earliest form, I guess you can say. So I want to acknowledge that, because I don't want to make it seem like, oh, I know how to explain Zen perfectly, because the whole point, again, and the way to respect it is to not talk about it that way. So I want to start off by sharing this story. And the reason why is because my first episode was about Zen, right? So I talked about it a little bit there, but even if you didn't listen to that, this should still be relevant to you. And the point is that if you feel like when you hear about Zen, it sounds like, you know, all your efforts or all your contribution to society is worth nothing in the lens of Zen. Like, why do people love it so much? This story is kind of cute. So a few years ago, me and Tracy, one of my best friends, Tracy G, she's a media personality. You may or may not follow her, but she has like an online presence. But to me, she's just one of my good friends. So anyway, we were out at this event and we were just talking, and I took a book out of my backpack and kind of showed her what I was reading. We were just kind of like, you know, catching up, telling her what I'm doing. She's telling me what she's doing. And of course, it was an Alan Watts book, surprise, surprise. And I'm just like going on and on about how much I love it. And I think she read like a few pages and she's like, nah, see, if I read something like this, it's going to make me not care about my credit score, right? And it was kind of like a joke. And the point of the joke is that reading something like this is too deep. It's going to isolate me too much from like my daily responsibilities and like what I have to do as a like responsible citizen. And I laughed, of course. And I was kind of like, you know, that's exactly what it is. And I definitely empathize with where she was coming from as far as like, I don't want to read this because it's going to take me too far out. But the point is that Zen, I think, offers this opportunity, you know, not all day long, but for, you know, some important periods throughout the day to become removed from the social conventions and the like intense responsibilities of life. And I think that in our mainstream culture, my experience, maybe this is your experience too, We are, you know, we're the population that says, we've got to fix this, or we've got to do this, or we've got to do something. We feel very much like we should be proactive in solving problems. And the Zen man says, do nothing. And that can be very confusing. It can come off as ignorant. It can come off as negligent, and even evil, depending on how strongly you feel about the, not even just how strongly, but just how you feel about the nature of good and bad and how you believe it works. So I want to talk about, how does this idea of quote unquote wanting nothing, right? A lot of people were asking me like, oh, Alex, like, does this mean you want nothing? Or how does this idea of embracing the ugliness and the boringness of life, what's so cool about that? Like, why are people into that? And why does that make some people feel good, you know? So I want to offer some perspective that might make this make sense to you. And the reason why that might be valuable to you is because maybe, first of all, you're just genuinely curious, like you just want to know. And you're kind of like Tracy, where you're kind of like, I don't get it. Like, why would I read this if it's going to make me like kind of sad or make me feel like nothing matters? And it can also help you better understand. The other reason why it could be valuable is because it can help you better understand any realists in your life, so you don't misinterpret their realism with cynicism, because I do believe there's a difference. And I do think a lot of realists get mislabeled as cynics. The other reason why I think this might be valuable for you is that you might find that practicing Zen can, and understanding it through this perspective, might be something that works for you. It might add depth and meaning into your life. Because I know that before I started practicing Zen, I was unaware that my life could even be that deeper. And the idea of embracing reality for all it's got was not working for where I was in life. So I was still in a very aspirational phase, and I needed a tint of optimism in all my endeavors. I couldn't deal with no, oh, whatever happens, happens. I wasn't trying to hear that because I just was too aspirational, and it just, I wouldn't have been motivated. But what changed is, I think life has its ways, right? Life humbled me because I think I clung so hard onto that optimism, onto those ideals, and it made the burns of dealing with, you know, psychologically abusive people, being abusive to myself through my eating disorder. And when I crashed and burned, I needed another way of looking at life to have the strength to kind of, you know, just keep going and keep like wanting to kind of enjoy life. And I think in a nutshell, what it was that I got tired of was being humiliated by my expectations. And I also got tired of not being able to see or enjoy the world in front of me. I had the rose-colored glasses. I could not enjoy life. I could not be grateful for life. I was too aspirational. Like, so it's like I would wake up in the morning with, you know, eyesight and arms and legs that can move and have a cup of coffee, and I couldn't really feel it because I had the cloudy haze of my aspirations over me. So Zen is not going to appeal to you when you're in that phase, and it's because the whole point of Zen is to get rid of that haze. And when I got humbled by life, I started to not find as much value from the haze, start to feel like the haze was this not just a burden, just this like obstacle. It was kind of painful. It was like this, like, it just felt very unnecessary and harmful. Again, my expectations went from inspiring me to kind of like being, like, I just felt like I had to be really cautious of them. Like, they were kind of these minefields because there were these opportunities to be really, really just heartbroken and disappointed when life never well, I don't want to say never. Obviously, some aspirations were met, but when life wouldn't meet up to some of these expectations. And that's when Zen started to be a more attractive philosophy for me, because it is about embracing the good and the bad and the realness of life. So I want to quickly define Zen and Taoism again. First of all, this is very taboo. You're not supposed to define it. But the other thing that's kind of annoying about trying to learn about Zen is that people do what they do with everything that they find to be sacred is they kind of mystify it way too much. And so if these definitions can offer clarity and tangibility so you can understand them, then I think that can be immensely valuable. And people have tried to define it. Everyone has their different definitions. But to me, I think Zen is experiencing direct reality. And again, you want to think about the consciousness of a baby who doesn't know any words yet, who doesn't truly understand any social conventions, and is just a receptor of experience. So they don't really understand the separation between everything they're looking at. The sounds they hear are not interpreted as concepts in their minds yet. They don't have concepts yet. They just have their senses. And Zen is, I think, to seek experiences that are the exact opposite of concepts, the exact opposite of words. And Alan Watts says, you cannot get wet with the word water, right? That's a quote that is exemplifying what I'm talking about. It's so, the reason why this is so ironic is because the only way to explain it is to use words and to use concepts. But the whole point is that, and that's why it's taboo. The whole point is that Zen is just really experiencing life, right? I can talk about it all day long, but until you sit down, you don't even have to sit down. You could just be dancing. You could just be living until you feel it in your own bones, in your own body. You know, me talking about it is only just like it's a nice icing on the cake. It's not the real thing. Another quote that's valuable is, and speaking of cake, to accept some idea of truth without experiencing it is like painting, is like a painting of a cake on paper, which you cannot eat. And so what is this quote saying? It's the same thing as saying, you know, don't mistake the map for the territory. It's the same thing as the vet telling the historian, you don't know what happened, right? The historian thinks he can tell you about World War II down to the T, but the soldier says, I was there. So it's this difference between talking about it and living it. And there's a big difference between talking about life or even thinking about life and experiencing life. And many people in Western society don't know the difference because the symbols we use, whether it be words, whether it be images, whether it be concepts, they're all abstract and they've become so hypnotizing that we've lost sight of the fact that they're an illusion. And so Zen offers this opportunity to make a distinction between not even just a distinction, but like, again, that awareness of, you know, what is that? What am I as a human without those concepts? What is today? What is this moment without that concept? And Alan Watts has some theories about why he feels like Zen got popular during certain times in Japanese culture. But a lot of it he feels had to deal with the fact that at a certain point, Japanese culture and probably still was very rigid and had these very ritualistic kind of transactional relationships. And there was just a lot of rigidity. There was a lot of formality. And Zen was this opportunity to be free of that formality just for a second, to understand that, yes, beneath this very intense civilization, there is a type of consciousness that connects us all together that is enlightening. And no, you don't have to think of your credit score, right? And so that's what it's there for. It's not, to me, I hate when people try to dress it up and make it seem like it's this huge, big thing. It can have a huge impact on your life. But, you know, like Pema Chodron said, she says, you can get enlightenment in a blink of an eye. It's just tapping into a certain, like, perspective. So I have some other quotes here from Lao Tzu that explain it in a great way. He says, the important distinction between the symbolic knowledge of science and the intimate knowledge of everyday experience. So again, Western society, we are very much married to symbolic knowledge. And you can, you know, a lot of people argue that we lost our touch with the intimate knowledge, right? The intimate knowledge is the stuff I was talking about last week, like the homemaking, like love and care. Who would have known? Like, I, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you know, I'm always making fun of the research that comes out. Like, scientists say social interaction is good for you. And I always laugh because I'm like, yeah, like we knew that when we were cave people. You know, we've become so far removed from our nature that now we have to do tests on our nature to prove that it's real. And so that's obviously a tragedy, and it takes away from life. Another Lao Tzu quote is, before I say that, I want to talk about Taoism. Okay, so the story goes that Bodhidharma started Zen and Lao Tzu started Taoism, but this shit is all so old, guys. The history and the accuracy of it, I don't think matters as much as what you can get out of it for yourself. So I'm not here to play like history trivia, but these are important, I think, you know, factors into it. So Zen and Taoism overlap. They're talked about in the same vein a lot. But again, for me, Zen is more about experiencing the direct reality, and Taoism is about non-interference. Okay. It's a philosophy that thinks that the only way to really find true peace is to accept things as they are, and that to not do that and to interfere to try to gain control or power, that is the source of disharmony, aka evil for some. And again, for some people who think you have to be very proactive and that they know the best thing for the world, they don't like that. They don't want to hear that they're wrong or that that idea is not fruitful. So it is what it is. But I just have to say that because I know in the face of most of our society, Taoism seems like punkness. It seems like, what do you mean? It seems like you're, like, again, negligent, ignorant. But I do think it offers some wisdom depending on how you see the world and depending on where you are in your life, right? Like I was saying. So again, with Taoism, the whole philosophy is that gestures, decisions, and relationships should be sincere. Sincerity is really one of the base principles of Taoism, and I think why it resonated with me so much, because I don't like doing things unless it's really coming from my heart, right? A lot of people don't. Again, back to the nature of who we are. So sincerity is about something coming from the person's heart and not from an outside force, not from someone, you know, applying outside force, meaning like rules or laws, etc. And so some people think that the more you apply outside force, like rules and like laws, the more order you have. But the Taoist sees this order as false and unstable because it is being done out of force and out of sincerity, which to the Taoist damages the balance of energy in a community, in a town, in a society, in the universe. Really, it's really about these principles of yin and yang. And one of the great, this was the quote I was going to say before, Lao Tzu says, when the equilibrium of positive and negative is disturbed, the four seasons are upset and the balance of heat and cold is destroyed. Woo, chills down my spine. I love talking about balances and harmonies. So yeah, basically, you know, Taoists believe that the more you try to interfere, the more you're going to mess it up, even if your intentions are great. And the reason why that's very fulfilling for me is because that's how I see tech philosophy. We see this nowhere better than in our technology. Well, let's interfere. Let's try to do this. Let's try to do this. And we seem to have a blind spot to our unintended consequences and how things kind of spiral out of control. And that the more you problem solve, what you're really doing is problem create. So you want to have a very, sturdy foundation and relationship and sensitivity. That's really what it's more about. More than it's about being a big, bad, you know, go-getter or whatever, it's about being sensitive. And it's less about going out and being proactive. It's about being sensitive to what's happening and trusting that by being sensitive, sincere gestures, decisions, and relationships will emerge and harmony will create. But we're so far away from that that I think a lot of people fear that, well, you know, if we just let people be, you know, be sincere, then the world would go to shit because everyone's really evil and an animal inside, which also stems from Western psychology and this belief that under man's civil nature is an animal type of like beast that wants to like fight, which it's a theory of psychology, right? It's very Freudian. It's very, you know, again, Western psych. So some people believe it, some people don't. I feel like Taoism suggests that it does have faith that man is ultimately quote unquote good under his civil nature. But I understand why some people don't agree. And that's the fun, right? That's really the fun. So another quote I love that explains this is, fill your bowl to the brim and it will spill. Keep sharpening your knife and it will blunt. This is another lousy quote. I will link to the books that these are in. They're kind of hidden in there. So I went to my Kindle notes to find this for you guys, because I obviously think that sometimes, you know, if you can find something that say a quote that says something better than you, you should use it. So let's break this down. Fill your bowl to the brim and it will spill. Keep sharpening your knife and it will blunt. What does this mean? Overdoing it and interference, it defeats the purpose, right? That's what he's saying. It's like, there's some people who think, oh, they don't know when to stop. And when you don't know when to stop, you have the same problem you started with. If you're sharpening your knife and you have a philosophy that as long as I keep sharpening this knife, it will get sharper, you're going to be upset because it will dull. And that's how I feel about our technology. And a knife is technology. There is a point, no pun intended, where the function of something has reached its peak and it's not in the full exercise of it. It's not in the fullest expression of it. It's in this medium, aka the middle way, right, is what you would say in Taoism. It's not the extreme on the other side. It's the balance. It's the thing in the middle. And so you have to, and you will find that pattern in everything. Too much of anything, what do they say? Too much of anything is bad for you. No matter what it is. Don't matter if it is something that keeps you alive. If it's too much, you're dead. Too much sun, you need sun to live. Too much sun, you're dead. You need water to live. Too much water, you're dead, right? You need all of the elements. You need air to live. If you have too much of a particular air, you're dead. We got to wear masks to block some of this air out, right? So the point I'm making is, this Taoist philosophy worked for me. It's not going to work for everybody. This is not an indoctrination podcast. I'm not suggesting that this is the answer for everyone. And I love to reiterate that, because the whole point and the whole attraction for me is how much it doesn't force things on people. Because I hate when people force things on people. I hate when there's this pushy attitude, because I think that it makes people do things they don't want to do, aka the first 2 decades of my life. not really my childhood, but you know, that early 20s messiness. Ugh, I am so happy I'm in my late 20s. I don't know why they don't tell people. Your early 20s and your late 20s might as well be different decades as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, just if you become prey to the media climate and to the Western mainstream philosophy, you will become prey to do things you don't want to do and to think things that are not meant for you or for you. And then you got to find out the hard way. And you also, I think the quote about keep sharpening your knife, it's this idea of, it's the same thing in business and just in life, right? You got to grow. If you don't grow, you die. That's something that people say a lot, which I have my reservations about. I get it. I totally do. I know who needs to hear that. That's like the person who needs to hear that is like the person who's been sitting on their couch and like hasn't like made a move in like 3 years. But the people who have grown and have reached a state of maturity, if you look at nature, things don't just grow and grow and grow. Things grow and they reach a peak and then they gradually start to pass and leave nutrition for the rest of the ecosystem. We're not just, it's not everything just growing out of control. When things are growing out of control, usually from interference from humans, like, you know, when we brought rabbits to Australia or whatever type of natural infestation that happens because we bring something where it ain't supposed to be, then you have things growing out of control and then you have a problem. So this idea of, oh, if you don't grow, you die, you're gonna die either way. And again, that's that reality that Zen gives you. Zen is not like, oh, and everything is gonna be great. I needed that type of philosophy in the beginning. But when I was humbled by life, by grief, by death, by breakups, by abuse, that wasn't working for me. So I was like, wait, hold up. What about bad stuff? Like, how do I deal with this? And so again, this idea of you grow, not really. People, one of my favorite fun facts, it's a sad one, but it's a favorite in the sense that there's a deep lesson in it, is that people don't know that what Steve Jobs felt gave him cancer. You have to understand, Steve Jobs was a food, he was like a food, what do they call it? Like a religious food Nazi. That's what they call it. It's not really a nice term, but it's someone who like is really strict about their food and really judgmental. I probably would not have liked him because he probably would have judged me for eating like meat or whatever. And he was a vegan. He wasn't even vegetarian. He was like hardcore, like judgmental vegan, which I have no problems with vegans. I just have problems when you're judgmental. So at least publicly, just at least judge me in private because I'm judging you back. Just kidding. So anyway, the fun fact is that the thing, you know, so of course he's thinking, oh, I'm going to outlive all you MFers. Like, I'm eating this. He was very like strict, blah, blah, blah. So boom, he gets pancreatic cancer. Now what, right? He, you know, you look at Bezos. Bezos, I think, has surpassed Jobs' age, and Bezos is like working out. He's like unstoppable. Like, Bezos is just getting started and he has the richest company in the world. Steve Jobs, I'm sure, wanted that as well and was planning for that through his food. Anyway, the story is that he believes, and there's evidence of this in the biography, that when he took, there was a point where he was CEO of Apple and Pixar. And I believe it was like a few years, but he says that that's what he thinks gave him the cancer because he was so stressed and he was so overworked. And that's very important context. We don't hear that part of the story. Everyone wants to be like Steve Jobs and he's a genius and he's that. Well, guess what? He's telling us that, hey, overworking shortened my life. And that's just an important story because, again, we talk about sharpening this knife. If you try to sharpen it too much, it's going to dull. It might dull even worse. And so that's an example of that, of someone who he, in hindsight, he's probably looking back and thinking, if I just sharpened it to where it needed to be instead of over sharpening it, I wouldn't be in this position. So food for thought. Another quote I have here is a Lao Tzu quote. I think either way, it's a Taoist quote. Life is a series of natural and spontaneous changes. Don't resist them. That only creates sorrow. Let reality be reality. Let things flow naturally forward in whatever way they like. I don't know. I mean, that was the kind of messaging that started to reawaken my appreciation for life, because when I thought life was supposed to be like this, it was supposed to look like this, then I couldn't really enjoy it for what was in front of me. I really had to fall in love with imperfection. I really had to be okay with giving myself permission to be happy right now, even though things aren't perfect. And again, Western mainstream culture, I think, tells us, I think many of us feel like we have this expectation that you are not allowed. You're not allowed to be happy unless you have accomplished X, Y, Z. You are not allowed to have love. Unfortunately, so many women, we have to deal with men who think, oh, well, I can't love you until I'm a bajillionaire. And then us as women, we're like, what? So yeah, I mean, all of that is just a tragedy. Okay, the next quote I wanted to read it's relevant to tech philosophy, because the thing is, y'all, when we think that our interference is always justified, when we think that we, always have the right answer, what happens is that, again, those actions are done not out of sincerity. Well, the person who believes that you have to be proactive, there you are usually sincere. They really do want to help. But what happens is they want to help so bad that they make other people do what they want to do. And it's those people who are doing things that are not out of sincerity. And then what ends up happening, and you'll see lots of like Taoist proverbs about this, where basically the more you try to guard the jewels, the more you're going to have thieves, or the more you try to get people to get along by telling them that they have to get along, the more they're not going to get along. So it's really being sensitive to indirect consequences. So I say that because this next quote says that when a gentleman understands the statements of Taoism, there's a few that he had listed, then he achieves greatness of mind and all things converge toward him like a flowing stream. So this part is, you know, I think it connects to this idea. Some people feel like, oh, well, you know, everything falls into place. And you get that in Taoism. There is this belief that things fall into place, but only when we act out of sincerity and not this false sincerity. And so the next line is, in this case, he leaves the gold in the mountains and he leaves the pearls in the sea. So why? That's just so profound for me, because to say that he leaves the gold in the mountains is to say that, okay, this human has realized that when you remove things from their environment, when you interfere with this superiority complex, like you as the one human being, you know where the gold belongs, that you're making the gold into this kind of enemy to your community, because now people interpret it as something that people have to fight over. And leaving pearls in the sea, it's the same sentiment. It's like the idea that the sea produces pearls, how beautiful is that? We haven't even really, in my opinion, had a moment to appreciate that, because what are we trying to do? We're trying to rip them out. We're trying to rip the pearls out. We're trying to rip these trees out of the ground. We're trying to, we want to rip this whole planet apart in the name of improvement, in the name of I don't know what, whatever good cause people think they have. And I'm not against sincere, you know, good causes. I think, again, my issue is when you are forcing others, because if it's not coming out of sincerity, then you have a problem. So, you know, there's a lot of advice in the Tao Te Ching, which is one of, you know, I guess you can say the main like book that Lao Tzu left behind, which again, when you say Lao Tzu, you're really referencing probably a few disciples from ancient China who wrote, because this shit is so old. The stuff is so old that, you know, it's not one person, but the wisdom is so true that, of course, it's reproduced, you know, every day in some bookstore. It's being bought every day all the time. Okay. I hope that this has given you some insight on why I don't see Taoism as depressing and Zen as depressing. Maybe you still feel like it is, and that's fine. The point of this was not to change your mind, but I guess to just offer perspective, again, to maybe give you more opportunity to understand a realist in your life. Because even if someone doesn't practice Zen, maybe they're a realist, and that might be offensive or hard to like manage in a relationship, whether it be like a coworker or a romantic partner. But realists feel more comforted by embracing good and bad than just hoping for good. And I just love when people can appreciate their differences instead of wanting the other person to be like them. And I think I value that because I really want that. I really want to feel that. And I know how nice it feels when someone lets me be different. And I want others to feel like they have the right to be different and that we can judge in private. But the point is, there is a way of showing respect and giving respect. In the judging thing, I'm saying half as a joke. I mean, I'm just leaving room for that humanity, for the reality of what does happen when people don't really understand or agree or approve of how other people see the world. So with that being said, I'm going to end with a famous old story, Taoist story, and it is called The Story of the Chinese Farmer, and I love this story. This story helps me get through life, everything. It helps me not attach, I think for me, especially as a business person. If you hear me talk about business, I'll usually say like, oh, business has a lot of up and downs, and like you signed up for a lot of ups and downs when you decided to have a business. And I believe that. But what I also believe is that you also didn't sign up for life necessarily. I mean, again, it depends on what you believe. But the point is like ups and downs are not a business thing. It's a life thing. That's the reality. And so that's what this story is about. So once upon a time, there was a Chinese farmer whose horse ran away. That evening, all of his neighbors came around to kind of just show their love, pay their respects, and they said, "We are so sorry to hear that your horse ran away. That is so unfortunate. That sucks." And the farmer said, "Maybe." The next day, the horse came back, bringing 7 wild horses with it. And in the evening, everybody came back and they said, "Oh my gosh, you're so lucky. What a great turn of events. You now have 8 horses? You must be so happy." The farmer again said, "Maybe." The following day, his son tried to break one of the horses, kind of like ride him in and train him. And while riding it, he was thrown and broke his leg. The neighbors then said, "God, that's so bad. I'm so sorry this happened to you." And the farmer responded, "Maybe." The next day, the conscription officers, the people who come to draft people for the army, came by and they were trying to draft people from the town, and they rejected the farmer's son because he had a broken leg. And again, the neighbors come running in. They said, "Oh my God, you're so lucky. Isn't that great? Now you don't have to worry about your son going off to war." The farmer said, "Maybe." The whole process of nature is an integrated process of immense complexity, and it's really impossible to tell whether anything that happens is good or bad, because you never know what will be the consequence of the misfortune, or you never know what will be the consequences of good fortune. That last part is an Alan Watts quote. Whew, I love that story, and it just works for me, and maybe it works for you, and I'm sharing this for the people it will work for. One of my favorite quotes is that you must enjoy the good times because it means a bad time is on the way, and you must enjoy the bad times because it means a good time is on the way. There's a way to enjoy everything and appreciate every part of life. even the parts we can't control, even the parts that don't make sense, there is a way, an opportunity to just be thankful, to be grateful that we have life another day. So I know I freaked some of y'all out, but this is something that really I wanted to talk about and hopefully is valuable for you all. So thank you again. Please send me your messages. Say hello on Twitter, on Instagram. You can even send me an email. I've been getting those as well. And have a great rest of your week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And if you aren't already, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more resources on innovation, economics, and culture, visit alexwolf.co/newsletter and sign up for my email list. Thanks.